From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. It is Tuesday, September 20th, 2016. We've got a great hour in store for all of our listeners out there. Well, today's Current Sports, we will give you a full recap of what took place this morning at Spartan Stadium as Michigan State head football coach Mark D'Antonio addressed the media to give us all a preview of the Spartans matchup against Wisconsin this Saturday. All right, he also touched on, of course, the Notre Dame win on Saturday night. You don't want to miss that. We will also chat about the Detroit Lions. We will invite to the show our dear friend, former Michigan State hoop star, Morris Peterson, as Mo Pete has a new sports bar and grill opening up in Flint, Michigan, entitled Mo Pete Sports Retreat. So we'll chat with Mo Pete about how the idea came to mind and how in the world does he balance being a sports broadcaster, managing a clothing company, and now, yeah, his own bar and grill. Pretty cool stuff, all right? Busy, busy man. In the back end of the show, we will chat about NFL Week 2 takeaways as Week 2 is officially now in the books. And it's Tuesday. We'll have some fun with Tickle Tuesday, folks. That and more. Call in to be a part of today's show if you want to join the action and join the fun. 517-355-WKAR. 517-355-9527. Without further ado, let's start this party like we always do. Here are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners. All right, we start with some shocking news in the world of Mitt Michigan High School football. Potterville High School, the varsity football team, has decided to forfeit its game against Dansville this Friday as Coach Philip Helm stated that they are unable to field a safe amount of players. Now, Potterville, with no JV or freshman team, came into the season with, get this, only a 19-man roster and saw three players go down in last week's game against Langsburg. Helm also said that two starting tackles had already been sidelined with concussions. The game was slated to be Dansville's homecoming game, but it will now be pushed back to my birthday, October 7th, against Fowler. The home of the Lansing Lugnuts, Cooley Law School Stadium, has been temporarily transformed into a miniature golf course for this week. The 18-hole course will be open to the public from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. Tuesday through Thursday and noon to 5 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday. Now, Linda Fredrickson, the Lugnuts Assistant General Manager of Marketing and Special Events, said that this is possible because the stadium's field will be replaced next week. Fredrickson also said that this week will likely be the only opportunity to play mini golf on the field for at least a decade. So a once-in-a-decade opportunity for all of you Lansing Lugnuts fans out there and just connoisseurs of the game of golf. If you want to go out and have some fun, again, a mini-putt golf course for 1 week starting today at 5 p.m. Exciting stuff. And we will actually be out there to bring you a pretty fun feature via WKAR.org as well as here on Current Sports Radio, all right? All right, the Michigan State men's golf team, speaking of golf, is in third place after two rounds of the Inverness Intercollegiate in Toledo, Ohio. Now, Michigan State, which shot a 9 over 577, only trails Duke at 10 under 558 and Auburn at 7 under 561. Now, MSU is the highest-ranking Big Ten team with Penn State at 4th, Minnesota in 5th, and Michigan in 9th. Junior Michael Sharp is tied for 5th with a score of 2 under 140. And senior Sam Weatherhead is tied for 9th with a 1 under 141. The Spartans return for the final round of the Inverness Intercollegiate on Tuesday. Today, freshman Andrew Walker was the first Spartan on the course at 9:28 a.m. And Sharp will be the last, has been the last, Spartan to begin at 10:12 a.m. All right, Peter Mrazek and the Czech Republic lost to Team Europe 3-2 in the World Cup. Mrazek made 38 saves on the 41 shots on goal, with 33 of the shots occurring during the last two periods in overtime. Mrazek made a couple of big saves, including one on Anze Kopitar's penalty shot in the second period, and followed up with a glove save on Roman Josi earlier in the third, near the end on a 5-on-3. Now, Mrazek made the start in net after Michelle Neurath gave up 6 goals on 50 shots against Canada. The Detroit Tigers start their last series of the season against the Minnesota Twins tonight at 8:10 p.m. at Target Field. Matt Boyd, the former Lansing Lugnut, will take the mound as the Tigers try to stay in the playoff chase. The Tigers currently trail Cleveland by 7 games for the division and are 2.5 back of Toronto and Baltimore in the wild card chase. Now, Hector Santiago will get the start for the Twins and has a 1.80 ERA over his last 4 starts. Santiago allowed only 1 run in 5 2/3 innings of work last Thursday against the Tigers. The bench is cleared Monday night after Madison Bumgarner fielded a ground ball by Yasiel Puig for the 3rd out in the 7th inning of a Dodgers 2-1 home win over the San Francisco Giants. Now, Bumgarner shouted after throwing to first, apparently celebrating the out. However, Puig thought that Bumgarner shouted at him, and words were exchanged before the benches cleared. No one threw a punch, but each team pushed and shoved the other before it was cleared. This is not the first time Puig and Bumgarner have had a heated exchange, as the first instance dates back to May of 2014 when Puig hit a 431-foot homer and flipped his bat. Yeah, Bumgarner didn't like that. The bench is clear 4 months later on September 23rd, 2014, when Puig moved towards the mound after being hit by a Bumgarner pitch. The feud continues, folks. All right, Cha-Cha-Tron was back on Dancing with the Stars this week. That's right, Calvin Megatron Johnson, former Detroit Lions wide receiver great. But this time, he was dressed up as one of my favorite shows growing up, Steve Urkel from Family Matters. Yes, he did do that, folks. Johnson and his partner, Lindsay Arnold, danced to the theme song of Family Matters as a part of the TV night theme. Johnson explained that he was a big fan of the show, and he was even surprised by the actual Steve Urkel, Jaleel White. All right, folks, Monday Night Football, last and certainly, thank goodness, least. The Philadelphia Eagles topped the Chicago Bears last night, 29-14. Really a snoozer of a game, if you ask me. The Eagles, after a major overhaul this season, this offseason, are 2-0, while the Bears are struggling at 0-2. Carson Wentz, he's a stud. He completed 21 of his 34 passes for 190 yards and a touchdown, while running back Ryan Matthews added 2 more. Jay Cutler injured his right thumb during a strip sack on the Bears' first possession of the 3rd quarter. Brian Hoyer, former Michigan State quarterback, entered as his replacement and went 9 for 12 for 78 yards with no touchdowns, no INTs. Jeremy Langford, former Michigan State running back, carried the ball 11 times for 28 yards and a TD, while Alshon Jeffrey had 5 catches for 96 yards. That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Let's start the show.
Yeah, we address it. fact, when Gerald busted his 73-yard run and he was walking in with the ball out here, it was addressed. You know, so even though it was in his hand, you know, you have to cross the finish line. You got to finish. No, I don't get it, but, you know, I just think people are so excited to get there, they forget they're not just quite there yet. So.
Yes, and that is how we start this afternoon's Current Sports. Speaking of hot, we've got a hot show in store for all of you listeners out there. Folks, as we customarily do each and every weekday afternoon, if you want to be a part of today's show, you know that number, 517-355-WKAR. That's 517-355-9527. You can also go to our social media pages at facebook.com/currentsports or even tweet me at AlMartinWKAR. You just heard the voice of the head coach of the Michigan State football team, Mark D'Antonio, addressing the media this morning at Spartan Stadium for his weekly press conference. As the Spartans, the number 8 Michigan State Spartans, now get ready for the number 11 Wisconsin Badgers, as Michigan State officially now starts Big Ten conference play. I was there at Spartan Stadium, and we'll go through what Coach D had to say concerning the upcoming game and matchup against Wisconsin. But before I do, I'd love to start the show with something funny or something interesting. And today I got two of them for you, folks. Now, you know, you guys know I'm a big connoisseur of the game of golf, right? So I'm on this workout kick right now. So I left my apartment around 5 o'clock yesterday evening. And, you know, I said, you know what, I got to hit the gym. But you know what, I want to go out to the driving range and fine-tune some things with my swing and work on some things, you know, just work on my golf game. So I go out to the driving range, and you guys will chuckle about this one. My favorite club in my bag is my 5-wood. Absolutely love my 5-wood. I'm so inaccurate with my driver and my 3-wood, so I don't hit with those much. But my 5-wood, I feel like I'm like Tiger Woods when I'm out there on the tee box, right? So I'm out there just trying different things with my 5-wood, and you know, I get like pretty much 90% done with the bag of balls that I had, and there's 3 left. So I put one of them on the tee. You know, the sun is slowly going down here, and I go back on my backswing, and I make contact with the ball, and all of a sudden, my shaft felt a bit light, and I'm like, whoa, what just happened? Why does this feel so light? I look at the end of the golf club, and the entire club head had shanked off somehow, some way. I guess I've had my clubs way too long. Actually, I've been balling with the same golf clubs since high school, and they've been fantastic. But I look down at my golf club, and the head of the club completely flew off somewhere in the grass. Yeah, thank you, Isaac. Crazy. I was so, you have no idea how irate I was. I was the only one out there on the driving range too, so I'm glad no one was around me. When I'm sitting there just in a fit of rage, Isaac, my favorite club, and I even... You're not supposed to do this, but I start walking off into the grass, into where you actually hit the balls out in the driving range.
Yeah.
Thank goodness nobody was there hitting balls, because I could have got a golf ball to the back of my head, right? But I'm out there searching for at least 10 minutes, and I could not find my club head. So until further notice, I don't feel confident to go out on the golf course right now and to use my driver and my 3-wood off the tee. So I gotta get a new 5-wood though, man.
That's worth looking into the warranty. I've gotta say, if a golf club head falls off while you're hitting a golf ball, it seems like that would be covered.
But the thing, Isaac, I mean, that warranty is clearly expired now. I've had these clubs since high school. So we're talking about 2007 is when I first got these clubs, and I absolutely love them. But yeah, so that's how my night went. And I went to the gym and worked it off though. You know, I pumped some iron and worked off my aggression. Also, how crazy is this? Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt getting a divorce. So
I saw
right? How crazy is that? So all of our male sports listeners out there, you may have a shot. Maybe not so much. I don't know. Angelina Jolie. I've always had a big crush on Angelina Jolie.
Are you a bigger Angelina Jolie or Jennifer Aniston fan?
Oh, I'm Angelina Jolie. Okay, I love Angelina Jolie. It's just something about her look, man. Something about Angelina Jolie. But yeah, they're getting a divorce now. Crazy, crazy stuff. So that's dominating. That's dominating the headlines everywhere that you look right now. So, all right. Well, enough of that chat. Let's talk about the Mark D'Antonio press conference that took place this morning at Spartan Stadium. I was in attendance, and Mark D'Antonio, of course, coming off a huge win over Notre Dame on Saturday night at Notre Dame on the road, coming off a week two bye, and Michigan State pulled out an 8-point victory after being up, though, 29 points in that game, 36-28, the final of that. And now, you know, as Mark D'Antonio stated this morning, now you get to play for rings, right? You know, now Michigan State starts Big Ten play, and this begins the journey toward their first goal, and that is, of course, playing in the Big Ten championship. Simple as that. This starts that road. Michigan State will take on Wisconsin. It's a 12 noon kickoff. And get this, Saturday's game marks the 53rd meeting between Michigan State and Wisconsin, and the first since 2012, when the Spartans topped the Badgers in overtime, 16-13. On the road. Now, the four-year gap between the meetings was the longest in series history since the Spartans began Big Ten conference play back in 1953, and the Spartans lead the all-time series 30-22 against Wisconsin. But it didn't dawn on me that it had been this long since both the Spartans and Badgers had met. Again, we're talking about, again, the first meeting since 2012, of course, with the realignment of the Big Ten, and of course you had the legends and leaders, and now you have the East and West. So I get it, but this is going to be exciting stuff because we haven't seen the Spartans and Badgers go at it in quite some time. Now, of course, there's a lot you can take away from looking at how Michigan State was able to handle Notre Dame. And Mark D'Antonio addressed a few areas. Of course, he called out John Reschke, who had a fabulous game on Saturday night. I mean, he was everywhere, including, multiple tackles. He had an interception out there. I mean, he swarmed all over the field, folks. And Mark D'Antonio went on to say that John was clearly the player of the game. Also, he, of course, was addressed about the status of Ed Davis. So he was asked his weekly Ed Davis question. And Mark D'Antonio went on to note that Ed Davis wasn't quite there on Saturday. Now, again, folks, we have to temper the expectations when it comes to Ed Davis, because this is a guy who got injured in training camp last year, did not play at all. He had to wait so long to try and get that sixth year of eligibility from the NCAA. And now we're talking about week three, if you want to get technical, week three for the college football world, where Ed Davis finally gets to go out there and experience some in-game action. And I want to correct myself. On yesterday's show, I thought Ed Davis had played three plays, but Mark D'Antonio said he only played one. But Ed Davis is going to take some time for him to get back into game mode, to get back to game speed. And that progression is going to be something that Mark D'Antonio and the rest of the coaching staff analyzes as the year goes on. But I tell you what, they could really use Ed Davis when it comes to that pass rush. That is something that we harped on when discussing that Michigan State and Notre Dame game on yesterday's Current Sports. So, you know, when you look at this team, and also when you look at that game, you know, a lot of people come up and ask me, why in the world, when looking at how that game went, why in the world was Michigan State an underdog? And like I've said countless times, well, Michigan State was coming off a week two bye, and they have to go on the road and play a team like Notre Dame, who's already in a groove, DeShone Kizer, blah, blah, blah. And you had all of the experts, quote unquote experts out there, picking Notre Dame to win. I mean, I looked at College Game Day that morning, and I believe all of them chose Notre Dame to win that game. I saw a few other pregame shows on ESPN's broadcast, as well as the Big Ten Network, and they all chose Notre Dame. If you look at Vegas, you know, they had Notre Dame as an 8-point favorite going into that matchup. So Mark D'Antonio was asked that question today, you know, by Detroit News sports writer Bob Wojnarowski, and Mark D'Antonio addressed it and said, quote, "What makes everyone an expert?" He went on to say, "I asked that politely." And shots fired. You can kind of see, hey, when you say that, it, you know, shots fired at the media a bit. And I love it because Mark D'Antoni was a guy who, when you evaluate his program and how no one's still talking about Michigan State, you know, when you turn on these national, you know, just these national programs that analyze the entire landscape of college football, you have these big-time guys still going on the air and really not talking about the Spartans. I mean, you know, even with the win against Notre Dame, they still find a way to lay in the weeds, to fly under the radar, and then all of a sudden at the end of the year, you're talking about Michigan State being right in the mix to do something special in the college football world. D'Antonio loves that, though, because he loves proving people wrong, and he motivates his team due to that chip-on-the-shoulder mentality. Yes, we've beaten that dialogue to death when discussing the Michigan State football team, but it's so true and so evident week after week after week. Also, pretty cool stuff, folks, is Michigan State University will induct 8 members into its Athletics Hall of Fame on Thursday as a part of the Celebrate 2016 weekend. The class of 2016 includes Eric Allen, who starred in football and track and field at Michigan State, Don Beam, wrestling, Trevor Harris, soccer, Steve Jude, football and baseball, and Pugh Kalaminen of cross country and track and field, Ken Popejoy, cross country and track and field, Patty Rudeus of softball, and of course, this one is going to have a lot of people in the house grabbing for a Kleenex, I tell you that. But Mike Sadler, former Michigan State punter, who was killed in a car crash this past summer, he will also be inducted into the Michigan State Athletics Hall of Fame. We will be chatting with those respective individuals and, of course, the family of Mike Sadler, who I assume will be, acting in his honor for that night's ceremony. The media availability for the Athletics Hall of Famers are on Thursday, right before the ceremony takes place that night at the Wharton Center. So I'll be out there producing a package for our website as well as our airwaves, and you don't want to miss that. But Mark D'Antonio also talked about Mike Sadler, what it means for him to go into the Hall of Fame due to the tragic circumstances and the type of guy that Mike Sadler was. I mean, he was a vibrant personality that if you came across him, you wouldn't forget. Simple as that. And he was a Hall of Fame guy. So that will be a heavy emotional moment for the Michigan State community and more specifically the family of Sadler's on Thursday night. And hey, I want to, you know, to lighten the mood here now, I also want to bring up probably the funniest part of the press conference. The fake punt. The fake field goal, the fake extra point, that occurred on Saturday night against Notre Dame that involved, of course, Lansing Catholic's very own Matt Maksud. Mark D'Antonio named it. He loves naming these fake plays, right? And he actually named it Muddle Huddle. So that's the name of the fake extra point that you saw Saturday night against Notre Dame. And he had some fun with that one as well. So now Michigan State, again, they take on Wisconsin. Wisconsin sits at 3-0. Michigan State at 2-0 after beating Furman in week one. Week two bye, going the road, beat Notre Dame. Michigan State has an opportunity now to move to 3-0 on the year. What do you think about Michigan State taking on Wisconsin as they open Big Ten Conference play? Call in 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. All right, I want to also transition now before we hit our first break into some chatter centered on the Detroit Lions, folks. The Detroit Lions, they sit at 1-1 on the year, and they lose to the Tennessee Titans in week two in the home opener. And they do it in dramatic fashion as Matthew Stafford throws a late-game pick that ended any opportunity for the Detroit Lions to possibly go down the field and kick a field goal to win that game. They lost by just 1 point against the Tennessee Titans. I definitely want to get your guys' thoughts on this, and I also want to invite to the show right now one of our fantastic production assistants here on WKAR's Current Sports, my man Luke, as well as our engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, Isaac Constance, because we really didn't get to dive into that Detroit Lions win yesterday. Yesterday's show was filled with a great chat with former Michigan State hoop star Jay Vincent, and we focused a lot on MSU football. But, Isaac, what was your overall thoughts? Starting with you, what was your overall thoughts on the Detroit Lions falling to 1-1 on the year and doing it, just really fizzling out on that last drive as Matthew Stafford threw a pick.
Well, overall, I just have to use the one word of discipline. You've got to be more austere when you're the Detroit Lions going up against the Tennessee Titans. That's a team that you should easily beat, easily keep in hand. Their best receiver is a tight end in Delanie Walker, and that's a good matchup for the Lions considering that they've got a fairly strong linebacking core. So when we were coming into this game, I thought, gosh, the Lions have this one covered, and they had anything but that. Overall, throughout the course of the game, it was the classic sports dirge of we beat ourselves. That's what Jim Caldwell had to tell this team in the locker room. You mentioned the last drive that fizzled out into an interception. But also, when the Lions were right on the goal line and Eric Ebron catches a touchdown after juking out the defender so bad that he fell out of his shoes and into the stands pretty much, the referee calls a pass interference. That's a big deal. That's a terrible call. But you know what? You move past it. You get that touchdown anyway. And the Detroit Lions capitulate. They fell apart after Eric Ebron was called for that pass interference. And this was a team that didn't look as resilient as it should have in a game where they really didn't have too much to lose, but they had everything to gain. A 2-0 start for this team after their start last season would have meant everything to Detroit. So for them to give this game up, it's not a big deal. At the same time, it was a worrisome sign.
Before I go on my rant here, I want to invite Luke Robbins to the show now. Luke, what were your thoughts on the Detroit Lions falling 1-1?
Mistakes. That was the game. Way too many penalties and way too many injuries. That was the biggest problem. You shot yourself in the foot a couple times. That one drive at the end of the second half, I believe, where they scored 3 touchdowns, but they were all called back. Mm-hmm. But you lose Ezekiel Ansah.
That's a big loss for the Lions as well because Ziggy is such a playmaker for that defense. Yeah.
You come into the game without DeAndre Levy, and then you lose two of the other linebackers. Mm-hmm. So now you're having a defensive end playing in the open field where, you know, especially this season, he's probably not that comfortable. And Marcus Mariota, second half, it was kind of like we saw against Indianapolis. They come out second half, and the quarterbacks just look so much better.
Totally agree with you. And also, they also lost Ameer Abdullah with an ankle injury in that game as well. And you know what? Again, I want to start with the penalties because the penalties really hurt the Detroit Lions in that game. 29 penalty flags were thrown throughout the game. Detroit coming off the worst of the pair. The Lions had actually 3 touchdowns nullified, 17 flags for 138 yards. That actually tied a franchise record. When you have that many penalties in a game, you usually don't come out in the winning end. But I want to say, if you would have told me that that Detroit Lions defense was going to hold the Tennessee Titans to, 15, 16 points, I would have said the Lions win that game. And, heck, even without knowing that, I mean, when you look at just how the Lions match up against Marcus Mariota and the Tennessee Titans, I took the Lions anyway. I thought we'd be looking at a team that's 2-0 going into week 3 here. I thought overall that Detroit Lions defense was able to contain Marcus Mariota pretty well. That was until, as you just alluded to, Luke, the fourth quarter. The sophomore quarterback, he went 9 of 9. Mm-hmm. 9 of 9. Didn't throw an incompletion in that entire quarter for 74 yards. And then how about, you know, a lot of people are talking about, and we chatted with this, Luke, before we took the air. How about that throw to Andre Johnson to put the Titans on top? I mean, how you know, everybody's talking about the catch. The catch was great. Don't get me wrong. He had 2 Honolulu blue jerseys flanking on him as he brought that one down. But Marcus Mariota put that football right on the dime to Andre Johnson, where really all he had to do was just put his hands in position to catch it within his chest because it hit him right in his chest. And just hold on tight as you come to the ground and, hey, you got 6 points. I mean, that was so good. But you know what? I'm kind of torn sometimes when I look at Matthew Stafford. Because Matthew Stafford, and I want to throw this question out to our listeners out there. Is Matthew Stafford an elite QB? And in that same conversation, what makes an NFL quarterback, quote-unquote, elite? Because I thought that Matthew Stafford performed pretty good throughout much of that game. And to his credit, there were many drop balls by the Detroit Lions wide receivers. I believe 7, if I counted them right, 7 drop balls throughout that game. With the game on the line, we saw Matthew Stafford show up huge against the Indianapolis Colts on the road, able to lead his team down the field to win the game. Same scenario against the Tennessee Titans, and he throws a pick that I really couldn't defend him about. I mean, the defender was sitting right there, didn't have to do much to pick the football off. Sitting right there, I did not know what in the world Matthew Stafford was looking at. So I don't know. Do you guys think that Matthew Stafford is an elite QB? And if not, or if so, what makes an NFL quarterback elite? I'll start with Luke this time and then go to Isaac. Luke?
Well, Matthew Stafford, I wouldn't say he's elite, but I think he can be a good quarterback.
He can be good, just not elite. And what's that line? What is that fine line? How do you define that line?
I think the line is a quarterback that's going to make the other players better. You know, you have a Tom Brady, a Peyton Manning, Aaron Rodgers. These guys are working with, you know, they do have some good receivers. But we've seen Tom Brady basically make receivers good. Mm-hmm. You know, you have Ben Roethlisberger, who these guys can make plays. These guys are going to go out there, and really, if your team is letting you down, they can pick up the slack. Matthew Stafford, I believe he can do that, but not as consistently as these guys.
That's the thing with me. Consistency is at really the top of that list when you talk about elite quarterbacks. Isaac?
Well, and when I talk about elite quarterbacks, it's making the plays which other quarterbacks won't even have the audacity to attempt. And that's a play like Aaron Rodgers squeezing in between two defenders through that window, a throw like Marcus Mariota to Andre Johnson. Now, I'm not calling Mariota elite. Don't get me wrong. You need consistency. The guy's well on his way, but at the same time, you need that consistency. Matthew Stafford, too many times, I think, has a bailout throw. And he had that option with Calvin Johnson, of course, on the team, where I call him the human safety net because he's designed to catch everything. Guys like Aaron Rodgers and Drew Brees, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning back in the day, they can make receivers great. They don't need Calvin Johnson. They don't need a great receiver whatsoever. Tom Brady won a Super Bowl with Andre Caldwell as his best receiver, for crying out loud. What they need is just guys who they can connect with and guys who know how to run their routes. And from there, the ball is dropped into a breadbasket. Mm-hmm. And all you got to do is catch it and run away. So I think elite quarterbacks, there's a fine line, there really is, but it's just about making those tough throws in clutch moments consistently.
Yeah, and for me, I think, you know, leading your team to the playoffs consistently is a big thing for me as well, and not just getting a wild card berth to do it.
Well,
I mean,
and leading is a key word there, too.
Without a doubt. And speaking of leading, also, I would be remiss if I didn't call out head coach of the Detroit Lions, Jim Caldwell, because, you know, Jim is known to be a conservative coach, but sometimes you just got to go for it. And there's two instances I want to point out when I look back at that game. At one point in the game, the Lions looked at a 4th-and-3. Really prime go-for-it territory, if you ask me, Luke. Jim did not keep the offense on the field. The Lions decided to punt. And then next play, you see DeMarco Murray go for 67 yards. Also, I believe Caldwell also cost the Lions in the final minutes of the game as the Titans were driving toward their game-winning TD. Caldwell, he refused to call any timeouts. Yes, you could argue that, okay, you want to keep them for offense, but if you can't perform on offense, they're really wasted. And Caldwell just did not break that momentum that you saw slowly building play after play after play for the Tennessee Titans as they drove down the field and you saw it culminated with that Andre Johnson catch. Caldwell, again, he isn't under any pressure, I don't think, when it comes to his job this year, because, again, I think he's going to do well this year. I still got a lot of faith in the guy, but I just thought he was just way too conservative in that game against Tennessee, and he had some moments there where he really could have made some huge statements. So, I don't know. What do you think? The Detroit Lions, again, they lose their home opener against the Tennessee Titans this past weekend. What do you think about the Detroit Lions moving forward now? 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will chat with dear friend of the show, Mo Pete, Morris Peterson, former MSU hoop great, now color analyst for the Sports Network, for the NBA's Toronto Raptors, and also entrepreneur who has a pretty cool endeavor going right now as we speak for the city of Flint, Michigan, folks. Mo Pete Sports Retreat when we come back after this. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. Again, we are taking your calls when it comes to the Michigan State football team. Again, they will open up conference play in the Big Ten against Wisconsin. Wisconsin sits at 3-0. Michigan State, of course, at 2-0. This Saturday at noon at Spartan Stadium, Michigan State has won three of the last four meetings, including a 37-31 victory over the fourth-ranked Badgers, which took place on October 22nd of 2011. And these two teams have not met, as I mentioned, until, you know, they would meet for the first time since 2012, actually. And going back to October 22nd, 2011, in the last meeting at Spartan Stadium, Kirk Cousins hooked up, if you remember, with Keith Nichol with a 44-yard Hail Mary pass in the final play of regulation. You guys remember watching that, right? I was a sophomore. Excuse me, no, I was a junior, actually, at Michigan State University watching that with my buddies, and we absolutely went insane when Keith Nichol was able to get a paw on that ball and cross the goal line. Michigan State head coach Mark D'Antonio was actually 4-3 in his tenure against Wisconsin, including a 3-0 record at Spartan Stadium. And there are many, again, there are many takeaways that you can really draw a line to when it comes to the Michigan State football team and that win over Notre Dame. I really think they answered a lot of questions about that new look offensive line. They opened up a lot of holes for running backs LJ Scott as well as Gerald Holmes, who we saw break out for a big run in that game as well. LJ Scott, very impressive though. He finished with 98 yards on 22 carries, and Gerald Holmes, he had 100 yards on 13 rushes, so I really think they have a nice two-headed monster attack when it comes to those two players. And, again, a lot of credit goes to that O-line because they got a lot of push when it comes to that matching up against that Notre Dame defensive line. Michigan State's biggest perceived weakness, though, again, is that secondary, and they will continue to have the spotlight on them as the year proceeds because when Michigan State had to make stops when it came to long balls down the field, they couldn't hold them. Quarterback DeShone Kizer, you know, he led the team to three straight touchdown drives in that third quarter. So, you know, they had a comfortable 36-7 lead, and then the Irish just sliced through that Spartan secondary like it wasn't anything. Conservative play calling, you know, call it what you will. Michigan State let Notre Dame back in that game. And I don't think it's as concerning as many people out there are alluding it to be, because at the same time, you know, Michigan State is not always going to have a lead like that against opposition on a week-to-week basis, okay? But when they do, they can't allow complacency to set in because they barely squeaked that one out. I don't think it's going to be a problem moving forward because Mark D'Antonio is a smart coach. He's a smart guy. He knows what he's doing, okay? And he knows how to motivate his players. I'm pretty sure he is going to preach that to his team and the coaching staff, because I thought that the conservative play calling had a lot to do with the coaching staff as well. I mean, they're calling the plays, for goodness sake. So Dave Warner, Jim Bowman, that offense has to still, with the 29-point lead, you got to still operate that offense like you're down. And they became far too predictable. All Brian Kelly had to do in that fourth quarter was just load the box because it was clear what the game plan was in that fourth. Run the ball and try and play against the clock. Just hope that the minutes and continue to tick off. Run the football. But, you know, when you do something like that, you become very predictable. And it led to a few three and outs. And Notre Dame took full advantage of it. Tyler O'Connor, that's a name that you did not hear Mark D'Antonio address much during this morning's presser. It was more so on guys like, you know, John Reschke, the defense, you know, the matchup against Wisconsin, the overall matchup against Wisconsin. He didn't address Tyler O'Connor, if at all, in his press conference. O'Connor is a guy who, again, he has not started this year great, but he hasn't started it horrible. I think Tyler O'Connor has done just enough to operate this offense efficiently and to move the chains and to really get – and I again, it helps when you got a running back core that put up numbers like they did this past weekend, because it takes a lot of pressure off of the shoulders of Tyler O'Connor. But, you know, Tyler O'Connor still has a lot of room for improvement, you know, because he started that game a bit off sync. You know, he threw many receivers short, threw many receivers behind, and wasn't very accurate on long throws. He was bailed out on two of them. Again, that Donnie Corley snatch in the end zone, it was underthrown. That could have easily been an interception for Notre Dame. But Corley, just the freak of nature that he is, I mean, able to reach over the defender, grab it, snatch it back, get 2 feet down, touchdown. I mean, that was absolutely fantastic. But he was bailed out on that one, as well as another pass with a pass interference call. And one did in an interception. So he's got to become more accurate. And I just think that comes with experience. Week by week, he's, you know, the more reps that he gets, the more in-game reps that he gets, the more comfortable he will be. And that run game, again, takes a lot of pressure off of him. Actually, O'Connor had 16 first-half passes, more than his average in his first two starts. From there, though, Michigan State turned to his running game, and that became just at the forefront of the game plan. And Michigan State going bold early. I think that when Michigan State's on primetime television and they're under the lights, they want to send a message, especially when they're an underdog going into a game like that. They want to send a message that they're not afraid, and they're willing to take a few risks here and there. They're willing to be bold, I should say. You know, you saw Mark D'Antonio go for it early on fourth down in his own territory on the very first drive, actually. And the Spartans had a two-point conversion following that first touchdown on a fake extra point. And they also went up tempo early as really just a change of pace. So I really like that. It shows that Michigan State isn't married to a certain game plan. They're willing to adapt it and show the defense different things as the game goes on. So, if you look at Michigan State's schedule now, again, they take on Wisconsin this Saturday. On October 1st, they hit the road and will play against Indiana. Then they come home for 2 weeks in a row to play BYU and Northwestern. Northwestern, actually, that game will take place on October 15th. That is homecoming. And then on October 22nd, they hit the road at Maryland. And then the game that you all are chomping at the bit to watch, October 29th at Spartan Stadium against Michigan. I think, you know, because I really, for me, the game that I had any doubt about was at Notre Dame in week three, coming off the bye. Looking at how the schedule plays out up until October 29th, Michigan State should, keyword should, be undefeated at 7-0 when they do meet Michigan late next month. And I also think the same for Michigan. I mean, when you look at Michigan's schedule, I mean, it's really a lollipop schedule up until the later part of the year when they have to go on the road and play both of their rivals in Michigan State and Ohio State. And looking at how Michigan played against, how they came out, I should say, against Colorado, and how they came out in that second half as well, Michigan has some question marks. And then you look at Wilton Spate. You know, where's the health at for Wilton Spate? Just how good can Wilton Spate be for this team as the year moves along? So there's some question marks I have for Wilton Spate. When it comes to the Michigan defense, that defense is one of the best defenses in the nation. So I'm not too worried about that defense, especially when you have a stud in Jabril Peppers lining up for you. But, again, I think just looking at it on paper here, both Michigan State and Michigan should be both undefeated when they meet each other on October 29th. Isaac, brief thoughts on what you've seen from Michigan State in the first two games of the year. I know it's early, but I do believe that there are some conclusions that you can draw based on how the offense is played, based on their consistency or lack thereof, depending on where you fall in that dialogue, there are some conclusions that you can draw from the first two games, I think.
Well, and you said this yesterday, and I absolutely agree with it, that the defensive backs look far better than a lot of people feared that they wouldn't be, pretty much. I mean, Demetrius Cox has been excellent this season, in my opinion. Viante Copeland, what a comeback, what a return from injury for the sophomore now. And then to see,
Demetrius Cox?
No, the other quarterback, number two, Darian Hicks.
Darian Hicks,
of course.
Yeah. He's been picked on a lot.
He has. Yeah. But he was good in the first half of the Notre Dame game, believe it or not. So I think that's one thing that you really have to focus on. The defensive line needs some adjustment.
It does.
Plain and simple. Malik McDowell's getting double teamed all over the field, and his effectiveness has been limited because he doesn't have any counterparts who are capable of drawing away attention from the offensive line. Offensively, I think MSU's looked pretty good overall. Tyler O'Connor, I think, stepped it up in the Notre Dame game. I thought he played a very good showing, better than Furman. And the running back situation, LJ Scott's fantastic, and Gerald Holmes as well. Like I predicted in game one, I think those two run away with the running back slide away from Madre London, in fact.
Don't sleep on Wisconsin. I think this will be a close game, yep. Isaac. Remember, at the very beginning of the year at Lambeau Field, Wisconsin did tap your LSU Tigers.
Don't remind me.
I know. I just had
to
bring it up. I know Wisconsin is a solid team. I'm wondering, though, whether or not Corey Clement, if we'll see him this weekend, because that's the big name for me.
That's the
question
mark.
Corey Clement, if he's out there on the football field, he's a stud. Now, I really think he can cause some havoc against that Michigan State defense.
Yes, he would. He would terrorize the defensive
line. Exactly, especially because you're getting really no push when it comes to that MSU defensive line. Really,
and
no pressure.
He's a power back, too. He's straight up the gut.
He is. All right, let's hit our second break. When we come back again, we will invite Morris Peterson to the show. Dear friend of our airways, former Michigan State hoop great, now color analyst for the Sports Network for the NBA's Toronto Raptors. Also an entrepreneur, as he has a new sports bar and grill opening up in Flint, Michigan. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Well, about 10 minutes left in the show, and we will now invite our guest for today's Current Sports. He is a dear friend of our airwaves. His name is Morris Peterson, former Michigan State hoop great, now color analyst for the Sports Network for the NBA's Toronto Raptors, also an entrepreneur, as he has a new sports bar and grill opening up in Flint Town, that's right, Flint, Michigan, entitled Mo Pete Sports Retreat. I call him Big Bro. Mo Pete, welcome to the show. How you doing, Mo?
I'm good, man. How you doing, Al?
I'm doing great. Exactly right. Always good to hear from you, man. Now, first of all, I want to dive into this. Oh, definitely, dude. I want to dive into this because when I found out about it, I'm like, here, Mo Pete again, adding another one to the list. I tell you, you stay busy, dude. What's the inspiration behind this sports bar and grill?
Well, first of all, I've been truly blessed to have some good people, you know, that I work with and my family to give me that foundation. And, you know, my mission is to give back. You know, when I came back to Flint a few years ago when I finished playing, I wanted to bring many different things and, you know, and figure out what I can do to help help the city. So we came up with just many different ideas. And the restaurant I came about, I have a few good I call them MJ and Scotty because they put together a real good restaurant team, Nick and Vic, Nick Jonick and Vic Pelucci. So those two guys, man, we got together and wanted to bring something, you know, sports related to the city, something that really hasn't been in the city before, you know, good atmosphere, nice, affordable food, sports with the rich tradition of Flint, man. I thought it was important to bring that element. Just a place where people can go and hang out and have a good time. And, you know, March Madness will be rolling around. So everyone in Flint is pretty much a sports fanatic. So I've been truly blessed to be able to bring this restaurant to life.
Now, Mo Pete, how is this sports bar and grill different from others? I mean, what are you going to try to do to really differentiate it and really make it just something new and fresh?
Well, the slogan is "Mo food, mo sports, mo fun."
Love it.
So, so those elements, not reinventing the wheel or anything, but just bringing, you know, everyone in the area loves sports, and I just want to bring another element to the rich sports tradition that that's helped groom me into the player and the person I am. And, you know, Flint has a rich history of sports, and I want to bring that element to the table. I've been going to the Genesee Valley Mall ever since I was a kid, so to get an opportunity to work with the Spinoso Group, is an honor. And, I'm super blessed, and to get an opportunity to bring jobs. You know, everyone knows with the economy the way it is and everything that's happening, it's important to bring some of those elements to the table. And that's all I really want to do. I don't want to reinvent the wheel. You know, there's plenty of different sports bars and different things out, but I just want to bring my side. And I've been super blessed to have the Michigan State family, have the Toronto Raptors, the NBA support me over the years. So I just kind of one of my ways of giving back and keeping that rich sports tradition alive.
Mo, you talk about that rich sports tradition in Flint, Michigan, that you, of course, are a part of. And I had a really cool opportunity a few months ago, actually, to head out to Burston Fieldhouse, the home of just a lot of sports legendary figures from Flint, Michigan. And we did a story on Clarissa Shields and her quest for another gold medal out in the Rio Olympics. And I got a chance to go in there. And I saw the mural that's really, really cool. It's painted and has many sports greats like yourself. And my team Cleaves is on there and Mark Ingram. And I turned to my right and I walked into the gym that you guys used to ball out at. And you could just look at it. I mean, it's old school and it has like this old school smell to it. I mean, it immediately just takes you back in the day. I mean, what does it mean to you to give back to the community that ideally made Morris Peterson who he is today?
Al, man, you know what? It's funny because we just did the United Way just gave a whole bunch of money to Burston to refurbish their parks, the park outside of it and everything. And I was just there Friday. And like you said, to walk in that gym, I mean, you're talking about some great, so many different sports figures stepping in that gym and getting their start there. It's important to keep that tradition. And when I saw that painting as well, man, I mean, I got goosebumps, man. I got emotional. I mean, first of all, for them to honor me and put me on there with all those greats, man, I mean, I was in awe, you know, to be a part of that. And, you know, Burston means a lot to me. You know, that's why we all want to stay heavily involved. And over the years, you know, Burston has been the safe haven for many different athletes and many different kids to come out. So we got to take care of our nest, so to speak, in a place that they help groom and shape so many stars.
Mo, do you feel more of an obligation to give back to Flint now, considering what has taken place when it comes to the Flint water crisis in the last few months here? I mean, do you feel more of an obligation than ever to do something for that city?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say more of an obligation. I mean, because even before, you know, when I got to the NBA, my mission was to give back to the city that gave back to me. So I've been doing it. And I don't feel it was more of an obligation. I feel like it's great to see so many different people coming together, doing many different things. That's what I like to see. I like to see, just people giving back, you know, water drives, whatever it is that they can do, giving their time. Like, I just had a backpack giveaway, and I went and spoke to some kids at the food bank. And I invited some of the kids there. I said, hey, you get some time, come on Saturday and volunteer. And, you know, some of those kids showed up and spent some time doing that. And, I mean, things like that, if I can make an impact and make it rub off that way, that's far more important than me doing something, you know, alone. I feel like all of us collectively giving back and, you know, and me seeing those different stories and me being a part of so many different people giving back, you know, that's where I get my joy. I get my joy from that.
Again, folks, we are chatting with Morris Peterson, former Michigan State hoop great, now color analyst for the Sports Network for the NBA's Toronto Raptors, and also entrepreneur who has a new sports bar and grill opening up in Flint, Michigan, entitled Mo Pete's Sports Retreat. So Mo, what's the menu going to look like?
Oh, man, it's going to be more new American. But I'm going to have some special dishes. I don't want to reveal too much right now, but we got a lot of different ideas and a lot of different things available. But I'll tell you what, you know, I like to eat. So I always tell myself if I ever open a restaurant, that's the first most important thing is the food and the service.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, treat people how you want to be treated. That's what we're going to, that's what, you know, I'm going to preach to my staff and, you know, and just try to have anything that I had rub off positively. And, I mean, I'm blessed. I'm super blessed, man. And you know what? We did have fun at the Emmys, too, man. I had a great time with you.
Yes, we did.
We didn't get a chance to talk about that too much, but, man, I had a great time.
Oh, with you. That was a great time, Mo. And, yeah, for our listeners who don't know, yeah, Morris Peterson and myself, we were invited out to the Emmys this year that was held at the Soundboard Theater at Motor City Casino. And, man, oh, man, did we clown up there. But we had a great time, dude.
Yes, we did.
I think they may have invited us for next year's as well, so we got to even come more correct next year.
We got invited back.
Now, I don't want to jump the gun, but a little birdie may have told me that, so we'll see.
Oh, man. Okay, man. Hey. You know, when I'm sitting over here in the gym right now, I'm going to run a couple extra miles and get ready for next year then, baby.
Love that, right?
I think he is to be proud of me.
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt, man. And I'm looking forward to it, Mo. And hey, before we get you out of here, when does Mo Pete Sports Retreat plan on opening? And do you plan on opening multiple locations out in Flint?
I do plan on opening multiple locations, but I want to get this one down and get the, you know, logistics of everything. We're looking to open in springtime. In February, but also, man, more importantly than all that and everything and what made it possible is congratulations to Coach Izzo for being named to the Naismith Hall of Fame, man. You've done so many things for this state and for these kids, man, to see that happen and see you get on that stage. And, man, I'm super blessed, and I feel great and honored to be a part of it. Coach Iz, I want to say I love you. My family love you. My mama, my mother, father, kids, everybody, we talk about you every day. So, just want to say I love you, Coach, and congratulations.
So fitting. And, Mo, I'm pretty sure you checked out his speech. We only got 30 seconds here, but what was your favorite part of Izzo's speech?
My favorite part? Well, you know what? When he talked about the players, that was responsible for him getting there, and it was just great to see him up there. I mean, you look at his career and what he's done, just to see him go on that stage, you know, smiling to see his family and everybody. I wasn't able to make it because my kids just started school. Mm-hmm. And, you know, me, I got a 100 million kids right
now. You do, to say the least, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was great to see him on that stage, though.
Mo P, big bro, good talking to you, man. We'll be in touch, all right?
All right, thanks, bro. Y'all have a good one. Go green.
There you go. Go white. All right. Well, less than a minute left, folks. We want to bid you all adieu. Time flies when you're having fun. We'll be back at it on tomorrow's Current Sports. Thanks so much to Mo Pete for joining us. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care and be easy, people.